outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, it's just you and me this morning. Yeah, Brad's not here, and some of you love the joking around Brad and I get to do together, and as well as exploring some things. And some of you like it when I just sit down and kind of explore a lot of other stuff with you, and I do have a lot of stuff today, so I don't need someone else to join me. Although, every time I sit down with this mic by myself, I wish I were having a conversation with you. And I realize that's kind of a few more people than I could fit in my office today or that we could even make happen one-on-one in the next 6 months probably. But I really enjoy the conversations I get in on this journey. They're fun. But today, you've just got me and a lot of comments and letters from people that I think will help us guide the conversation today. So, hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is The God Journey, and I want to welcome you here. This is from rainy Southern California. This is rare for us. We've had 4 days of overcast skies and water falling from the sky. It's a concept. We love it. It's been good. We're getting a lot of water. Need a lot more. So last year we had this. We had an early storm and then didn't get anything else virtually for the rest of the year. So hopefully this is the start of something, not the end of something, because we really need lots of rain out here. Hope you had great Thanksgiving time. We did. Wonderful time with our family, extended family. My dad came down. Brother and his family were together. We had a great time. Spent a number of days just enjoying my father and each other, and even a big Nerf gun war broke out here. I managed to stay out of it this year, which is kind of an improvement for me. I'm usually in the middle of that stuff. But for some reason, I didn't get involved. So, and we're still finding Nerf gun darts all over the house. But kids had fun. Well, many of you know we had an event here at our home a couple of weeks ago since we podcasted last. And I just wanted to read a couple of letters from folks that were here because I love what people discover when they just hang out in a day like that. And it was a y'all come day. It was just, if you want to come, you're from the area. We didn't have a lot of people that we knew locally that we normally hang out with. This was for people kind of outside that group. And we had people come from all over the Southern California area and had a great time. And I like the things I hear back from people. And this is as true of the time here as if we're in Texas or Ohio or somewhere else. Sherry wrote this. She said, "I'm still in awe of how complete strangers came together as if we had all been friends forever. God is so amazing. God bless you both for sharing your home and your lives with us." Well, thanks, Sherry. I love that too. I get off airplanes all over the world and start with people I don't know at all. And it amazes me how even in a few hours, much more over a few days, the depth of friendship that comes, it does seem like we've been family forever. And I guess we are. I think that not only is God amazing, I think this thing we call the church is amazing. And I don't mean the church humans build. I mean the church Jesus builds. Because when we let him tune our lives to himself, when we learn to live in that space of being loved and loving others, and then you meet other people who are learning to live in that space as well, then you find things like agreement about all kinds of issues isn't that important. What's important is the hearts that God's knitting together and loving each other, not where we'd like them to be, but where they are. And just loving people and enjoying them and taking an interest in their lives and watching what happens. I think that's about as beautiful a thing as we get. Ken was also here and sent me this note later. He said, "I just wanted to thank you again for hosting a wonderful gathering. I feel like a little kid who just got off a fun ride and said, 'I want to do that again,' all in caps. It was such a pleasure to meet you and Sarah and everybody else." And I mean, that's always fun stuff. I could look around the room as people were leaving at the end of the day and people were saying, "I had no idea there were other people on the planet thinking like I'm thinking, wrestling with the things I'm wrestling with," and how quickly people just connect at a heart level. I mean, we did introductions for a little bit and then we just kind of said the things you wanted to explore from my writings or other things that would draw you here. And then we broke for lunch and we almost couldn't get, and sometimes we don't. Sometimes once we break for a meal, that's it. People enjoy talking with each other so much and watching those relationships begin to grow That's fun all its own. We did come back together for a bit of a conversation, but Ken actually had gotten here. Well, he was one of the first ones here and here a bit early, and he and I got in a conversation that got interrupted. So he reminded me of that conversation in this email because we never got back to it, and we didn't figure we would. As other people started walking in the door, unfortunately, this didn't come up, but I love what he talked about. He asked me a question. Which is more tragic, for a son to stop expecting his father to love him, or is it for the father to stop loving his son? Which more tragic? And I think they're probably both related, and I think they're horribly tragic. But where he was going is this. The next thing is the expansion of that question for clarity. Which is more tragic, when an earthly father stops loving his son? And that alone I cannot imagine. I don't know how an earthly father stops loving his son. In fact, I would say he never did. Love doesn't have an end point. You care about someone, even if they go down a dark road, even if they turn their back on you, even if they hate you. How does love ever stop? I don't love you anymore. Any love that stops is a human-based love. It's what we talked about, mutual accommodation of self-need. I get something from you. When I stop getting it, I stop loving. Tells me it's not real love, but it is what we negotiate as human love almost all the time. So I get what Ken is saying. And then he says, or when the son stops expecting his heavenly father, or anyone else for that matter, to love him. And you know what? I meet people like this who've given up any hope that love is something they can experience in, and even wonder if anybody else really does, or if everybody else is pretending. But what about someone that has no expectation of receiving love for someone? And to me, that's why the incarnation, that's why Jesus came, to show us, even if we weren't loved here well by other humans, we are loved well by the God who made us. And that everything about sin and life and shame discouraged that. In fact, Ken goes on and says, there's any theme to the last 4 years, and I assume that's his life, it's the development of an expectation of love. This, of course, has much to do with shame, guilt, and fear. Much untwisting has already been done, and there's so much left to go. I'm not where I'd like to be, but thank God I'm not where I was. The process of removal continues. Well, Ken, I tell you what, enjoyed meeting you. Enjoyed meeting your friend. He came up from San Diego, I believe. And, man, we had some good talking during the day. Would love to have gotten back to this, because I think once you lose the expectation of love, now, where's life after that? Life's just nothing but a series of circumstances you try and negotiate as best you can for your own well-being. And I love that he's saying God's creating the expectation of love in him, that he can be loved, not just by God, but by us. And if you need anything to spur you on to become a lover in the world, I think it's emails like that. It's people who don't know they're loved, and maybe the first expression of love they see is from someone like you, who's just willing to take an interest in them. Most of our religious ways of loving were all about converting people, all about getting them into our club, all about, you know, somehow our love was very manipulative because it had a desired outcome. And we didn't just take an interest in people for who they were, and in loving them for who they were, watch what would go on from there and grow. So, man, that was fun. We enjoyed the day here. Going to have one next week in Las Vegas. If you're in the area and you want to join us, we're just pulling some folks together. You can email me, WayneJ@lifestream.org, and we can put you in touch with the details. Someone's offered to open their home. We're actually there for other business, Sarah and I, to be with some other people in more of a personal kind of way. But we had an evening clear out that Sarah and I were just going to be together, and we talked about going to a show or doing something else, and we really felt God kind of drawn us to open up a time. So if you're in the Las Vegas area and you want to come hang out with us, come do that. I'm going to be in, looks like now, Toledo, Ohio, toward the end of January, if you want to tune into that. Talking about getting to Kansas City, possibly Wichita, possibly New Zealand this spring. There's some other options too. Atlanta, Clemson area. I'm looking to get there probably early February. So if you want to hang out with us, keep an eye on the travel schedule and just come join us. You can be part of days like that where people just go away blessed that they're part of a larger family. It doesn't matter that we all see things the same way, and we certainly don't need a program to draw that together. Maybe we can just find it in a wonderful way with each other. Friends and friends of friends. and that growing reality. In fact, we're having one in France sometime this summer. There's a group pulling together there, and I'm going to join it for a while. We're just like we did in Ireland a few years back. It's not teaching sessions. It's not people aren't getting together to be with me. It's just people are getting together to celebrate the church God's building in the world. And so we're going to do that in France in early July, I think. If you're near those, want to be part of those, let us know. If you want to host one in your area, let me know. Man, I love hanging out with people. I love helping them experience a little bit of what church life is about. And I love having more of that interaction I talked about at the beginning of the podcast, where it's not just a one-way conversation, where we can actually talk about the things that matter and the things that people struggle with and how do we live this journey. Because it's incredibly disorienting when we move from being part of a regimented environment where every decision is made for us and our only decision is to go along or not, to now we're living in an environment where we're what? I've got to have a little more initiative. I'm going to open my life up, and we're going to talk more about that today. We got a lot of response last week to the Nuns, Duns, and a Wider Conversation podcast. Let me just say this about the blog. And most of you are doing great. Most of you get on there, and we just extend the conversation, and people share their thoughts and ideas and experiences. And it's fabulous. We kind of have a growing thing on there lately. Just a few, and I mean a very few, who want to turn it into a criticism of the podcast, what they liked about Brad or I or didn't like. And, you know, I'm going to take a little more of a hand at helping that blog not go that way. You're welcome to disagree with things on the podcast, but, you know, at least listen to it. If you're starting your blog post with, "I haven't listened to the podcast yet," but probably don't need you to keep going. And I'm probably going to take those down, especially if they don't add to the conversation. I've done that very little. I've probably taken off 5 blog comments in the last 2 years. So, I mean, it's very, very rare that I do that. I did it to 2 last week, and I just kind of want to make an appeal here. And I know most of you get it right, so the wrong people are going to feel bad. I know that, and I hope that doesn't happen. We didn't do this well with the forum early on. We had a major problem on the forum, and yeah, it was broken people in broken places, but it became a place to attack people. And when it became a place to attack people, everybody scattered, and I think we're still suffering the effects of that on the forum. Plus, it's an older technology, and not a lot of people go to forums anymore. But I'm not wanting to see the blog do that. I'm wanting to see the blog be a safe place for people to interact on whatever it is that we're talking about. You're welcome to disagree and present other opinions and thoughts. That's not a problem. But when it gets to be more personally attacking someone, even each other, if that starts, we're just going to pull that down. One of the things, I got sent an email this morning from Jessie. She has the same angst I do. She says, "I realized at the end of the podcast that part of the struggle that people who are not part of an institution or system but still love God with all their hearts have is labels. People keep trying to put a label on it, and the label never really fits. There's always some part of the label that makes them feel uncomfortable. Once something is labeled, then there's a box that people feel they should work within because it has been labeled. I think the reason this doesn't work is because you cannot label what God is doing. As humans, we try to make things fit into the confines of a label. And you can't always put a label on what God's doing. God is so much bigger than that label. So what do you call what God is doing? Nothing. You live your life and you do what God says you should do, and don't try to label it. Maybe one of the hardest things for people to do, even if I myself find that every so often I want to put a label on what God is doing, I know that labels don't work." Man, I love that. I think that gets to the heart of it. And it's not just that God is so much bigger than a label, try and put that on it, but each of us as individuals is much more significant than a label will ever contain. Labels serve a couple of purposes. One, they're to market stuff. We've talked about that before. You put a little tag, a cute little tag on something, and now you've got something to franchise, and people got something to boast about, because I'm one of these people who do this, or you're not one of these people, so now you're those people who don't do this. It's a very human thing. I'm not going to say it's a very fleshy thing. It's just a very human thing. Because of all that comes at us, we want to compartmentalize people in boxes. And it's not helpful when we do that. So I think even what church do you go to? That language was always, "Oh, you're a Vineyard person. That means something. You're Episcopalian. That means something." And so we've got all Episcopalians in a box. We've got all Vineyard people in a box. We've got all Calvary Chapel people in a box. And what that keeps us from doing is negotiating with people as individuals. And I agree. I think labels are worthless. I don't think they're helpful either in trying to get your own little marketing tool in the body of Christ to create a ministry or something with a cute phrase or a cute something. I think that's dangerous. And I think the other side of that is people who put folks in boxes. I'm working on an article right now. I don't know when I'm going to get up on the blog. I hope today, but I don't know, about what's going on in Ferguson and illegal immigration. As long as those things remain stereotypical, whether it's white cops or black neighborhoods or African-American neighborhoods, whether it's illegal immigrants or, you know, we put a label on it and then we can regard it in a certain way. And particularly when those certain ways get to our biases, man, that's why our society's coming apart. I don't think the new creation works that way. I don't think the new creation wants a label on our stuff or on other people. And I think people who learn to live more freely in the new creation begin to have this little yuck factor moment with labeling stuff. And we've talked about some of those labels recently. I don't pick on them because then people get all upset that I've picked on a certain label. I just think as the new creation grows in our hearts, we're more concerned about Jesus and people as individuals. It's not the illegal immigrant or the homeless or whatever. It's that individual. And what are you going to do? That may be the lesson of the Good Samaritan, maybe the lesson of the woman at the well. He could have just, oh, she's a Samaritan woman. Well, she was willing to fit that label and let him be dismissive of her. I think it's creepy. And that's, I think, why the nuns and duns, and now something with some other label to try, because I don't like the nun label. I don't like the dun label. But we did get a lot of email, particularly from people who are dealing with that sense of doneness. And what do we do? I hate the term. I do. I don't, because we're not done with Jesus. We got done. And maybe this is what we saw. Maybe what people saw was that the bride of Christ, this lovely, beautiful creature God's building in the earth, cannot be crammed into systems that humans create. It's not a building made with hands. It's not a system made with hands either. Now, it's not to say, and I know people misunderstand this all the time, it does not say there isn't structure to the body of Christ, because there is. There's structure to people being in my home last week. There's nothing wrong with structure. When a structure becomes a system, now we're going to do it every week at Wayne and Sarah's, and who's going to be in charge, and who gets to come and doesn't come, when the house gets too big, what are we going to buy? When a structure becomes a system, I think it takes on a life of its own. And the biggest problem with that is it seeks perpetuity. It seeks to work forever. The body of Christ is just too lovely, too beautiful to be crammed into a system. And I know most of us and most Christians would not even understand what I just said. They wouldn't. And I wouldn't have for 40 years of my life. I go, what do you mean? The system works great. And look, we got this going. And I'm teaching on Sunday mornings. We got a worship team. People are coming. They love it. The system is great. And you have to keep ignoring where that system breaks down and people get hurt and people get chewed up because they didn't fit in quite the right way. And then the longer it exists, the less of an expression of the church it becomes. And someday the yuck factor gets to the point where you're going, boy, I wonder if this is even what God had in mind. And I love people who get to that point, and there's that awareness we talked about a couple weeks ago, where I realize that this beautiful bride that Jesus is building in the world cannot be crammed into a system. The system is too broken. It's eventually going to end up hurting people, and it's going to end up getting back to labels and insiders, outsiders. And we've continually labeled the body of Christ's various factions of it to greater division and suspicion and arrogance. So I hope the language moves away from that. I hope we become people. So what do you do when you feel like you're just done with it? And that, I think on the cusp of that, the beginning edge of that, is what I want to talk about more today, because I've got an email that kind of points us that direction. People wonder, what do I do about this? What do I do? I mean, I used to Sunday morning, go to church on Sunday, and there's people there and friends. And even if the friendships didn't go deep, stayed superficial, at least I had some. And now I don't feel like I have any, and I don't know what to do. And the people used to love me now reject me. And what do we do about that? I got an email from a friend who had just finished reading, who had a friend. This is a friend of a friend email. Okay. This person didn't write me. He wrote my friend. His name's Michael. He said this, I just finished Finding Church. Wow, I feel like that book put into words what I've been feeling for several years. I took 7 pages of notes. One of the things he said, referring to me, that really set me free was on page 23, just maybe your growing discouragement is not the proof of his failing, but the evidence of his working. I've been thinking for years that I was being rebellious or argumentative for questioning the system, partly because I was just thinking that and partly because I had others tell me that. And those words really set me free. Now, that's how he starts. And then he said, but I want to ask a few questions. And so this friend sent me his email saying, have you gotten this email? And so he didn't ask me these questions. He was actually asking his friend. But these are questions I hear all the time. The questions I heard a couple of weeks, Saturdays ago when people came here. And how do we negotiate this new life? What is it like? And so he has 4 issues that he kind of wants to sort out. The first one is this. My wife is more of an extrovert and I'm an introvert. So we're struggling with this. She enjoys the big group worship that goes on in the church, quote unquote. I never cared as much for it, so I don't miss it, but she does. With living this way, how would she get that? Or we need to learn to get it other ways, like through a CD or something. Thought about going to a church for her sake and then try to focus on relationships with people. But the two problems there, one, I have no desire to go. The idea of it repulses me. And two, I've tried it in the past and other people are so congregation minded that it's hard to interact with them one on one. And he says, for instance, I want to go play with you guys, go play basketball, and they want to start a ministry out of it and takes planning and announcing to try and have a basketball ministry. He just wants to go play basketball. Man, I think this spousal thing, I get this email a lot. I talk about it a lot with people. And whether it's just introvert or extrovert, I'm suspicious of more labels again. And to the degree that your recognition of your introvert or extrovert nature frees you to be who you are and not fit other people's expectations, I think it can be incredibly helpful. But all the tests that we have that try to measure that, the thing I notice about them is that they measure our personality as it is. And most of that is often twisted by coping mechanisms we've used to negotiate life. For instance, some people are introvert because they've been told they're stupid and they don't have anything to say and they've kind of bought into that. So they're quiet, not because they're truly an introvert who loves to and refreshes themselves in more alone space. The reason being with other people is so stressful is because they feel like they'll be found out if they talk. And what I've noticed about people on this journey is the introvert-extrovert thing doesn't always hold. We know what our personality is as we're coping with life in our fallen nature or through shame or guilt or whatever. And some people talk at it. Some people look very, very extroverted because they're always covering up with an exterior personality that's contrived. I love the idea we don't really know who someone is until God untwists them. And the coping mechanisms get out of the way. And I've watched people who I thought were introvert become quite outspoken and quite engaging with people as God freed something in them because some of that was coming from a broken place. Same thing with people who are just kind of outward and brash suddenly move into quieter space because they had to control every form they were in because of their fears. And now they don't have the need for it anymore. And so they peel back a little bit. I kind of think of myself as an omnivert, not an extra or an intro, just an there are times when I fit one, there are times when I fit another. I just want to live in the freedom of who I am. Again, if that label, if you're more introverted and it helps you not have people push you into space to do things that are not in your heart to do, then that can be helpful. I get that. But I'd like us all to keep a little bit of suspicion. I don't really know what I am yet until Jesus untwists me. But the bigger difference is, what about spouses and that are in different spaces on this journey? And we've shared this before, but it keeps coming up. There's 3 journeys in our marriage. There's Sarah's journey, there's my journey, and there's our journey. Somehow religion said it always had to be our journey. And the way to be our journey is the man got to be right and the woman had to shut up and follow along. And we kind of do that whole power thing. I think in the reality of a new creation marriage, which Sarah and I are going to write that book someday, very excited about some of the things that we'd love to share with people, is that number one, there's 3 journeys in our marriage. There's Sarah's journey, the one God's inviting her on. And there's Wayne's journey and the one God's inviting me on. And at different stages of the journey, we're going to be in different places, maybe even wanting different things. I hope I can be in a place to be Sarah's biggest cheerleader. I want to cheer her on her journey. I don't want to get her on mine. I want to cheer her on hers. Hopefully, when we get back from our spouses, they want to be the biggest cheerleader on our journey. Sarah wants to be the biggest one for me. She's saying, man, go with it. If that's on your heart, go with it. If I go with you, I'll go with you. If I can't go with you, I'm going to let you go. We're going to explore. The idea is that if Sarah's following Jesus and I'm following Jesus, as we explore our journeys, we're going to come to the our journey from a wholehearted freedom, not from someone being forced to do what someone else feels is right for them to do. That comes down when you explore this whole church stuff. What do we do about my wife likes going to this, or my husband does. I don't get anything out of it. What do I do? And this is, I think, what we maybe can be helpful with those who are kind of like done with it, is that when you're done with that system, you don't want to fall into the same pattern of having a non-system system. In other words, I'm going to champion the fact that we're outside of that and we're better than that, and people will go to that. Now, for a while, because we've been taught in that whole religious environment, we get our validation from being right. So I left because I thought it was wrong. And so I want you to know it's wrong and I'm right. And when you're telling me I'm wrong and you're right, then we have this conflict, and people ask you where you go to church, and people would seize up because the issue is I feel judged, I feel put out, and you will be judged. I mean, there's obviously people are going to say, if you're not going to one of these Sunday morning things, you do not belong to the Church of Jesus Christ. And I just think that's absurd. I don't think it's true. I think the church is a family. It's bigger than any institution. And if you want to live it out institutionally, God bless you. There's ways to do that. Just be wary of how the system can twist it. But enjoy it. If you're finding yourself living outside of those systems, enjoy that too and find ways to express body life without it. Now, as for a couple, live inside your freedom. And what I mean by that is this. I think when you're first breaking free of religious systems, you first of all got to find your freedom. That may take you a couple of years or more, where you're finding your freedom, the freedom from shame, the freedom from obligation, the freedom from performance, the freedom from other people's approval. And the only way to free from other people's approval is to feel their disapproval and walk through it with Jesus till it no longer matters. Because you're going to get disapproval. If you think that gets healed because people stop doing that to you, you're just not going to find freedom. It takes a while to find your freedom inside the affection of an incredible father. So take some time to do that. Take a couple of years. And then live in that freedom. And if your freedom is to go with your spouse, if they enjoy going to a Sunday morning event, if Sarah wanted to, I would go. I don't really go every week. I'd go often with her. And I would sit there and try and get what I could out of it, meet some people. And if all the people I want to play basketball with want to start a ministry, then I'll go out to the street. There's people who want to play basketball, believe me, who don't need to start a ministry out of it, who are a little appalled by the idea. But it's a way to navigate that. So you find your freedom, you live it. If you go to a Sunday service with your spouse, and your freedom is such that, man, it's going to choke you out for another 6 days. You're going to spend the next 6 days recovering from all the guilt, performance, obligation, disapproval messages you get. Then obviously it's not your freedom to go with your spouse. Hopefully it's in your spouse's freedom to go without you and not to be embarrassed by that. And that's just what a couple has to work out together. Where can you freely lay your life down? And where can you not? Because you just can't. And so you find your freedom, you live inside that freedom, and watch it grow, because it will grow. I think you get more and more free from some of these things. You're more free to negotiate the conversation. And then finally, share your freedom. Just love people where they are. Don't love them by getting them to see that their system is a failed way of doing church. Why do we want people to agree with us about something we wouldn't have even agreed with us about 5 years earlier? God took us on a journey to see through something. Until you're on that journey, until it becomes absolutely absurd to think of the bride of Christ crammed into a human institution, until that happens for somebody, they're going to think it's valuable. They're going to see it as valuable. They're going to see you as a rebellious problem, not being valuable with it, not enjoying the value with them. Take a break. Relax. You know, find your freedom and live in your freedom. And you know what? You'll have no compulsion to make others see what you see. You'll be in a space just to love them where they are and watch their life change. And I just want to read to you something that Jack sent me. And I've read a couple things from Jack lately. Jack's a friend of mine from South Carolina. He said, this kind of came up when he was reading part of Finding Church, which he'll get to in the end. And by the way, for those of you that have been waiting for the audio version of Finding Church, it is now available. Audible.com has it. iTunes will soon, probably by the time this airs. Amazon.com will have it as well. We're not going to print out, I guess printing out CDs and, you know, doing that thing just isn't a deal anymore. People just don't do it. We have a hard time finding someone that would print them for us. So we're figuring that it's downloadable technology. You can download it and print your own CDs if you need CDs. But so we finally got that out. It's me reading it, so it's my voice yet again. Sorry. But Jack wrote this. Years ago, a few of my musical friends and I put together a group to play in places where other groups might not. Children's homes, adoption centers, children's hospitals, etc. Amazingly, we were pretty good. We have a local children's home and wanted to go there to play for them. It's run by the Episcopal Church, and we met the priest who was in charge. We found ourselves sitting in a very old and beautiful chapel, meeting with a pretty young guy who they called Father John. It bothered me at first, but then we were not there to buck a system. Good. So as the young man started talking, I was expecting him to tell us what time we should set up to play, how many songs, detail of what we should sing. He just stood there and said, now listen to this. I love the expectation. That's when you get into a system mentality and you think, okay, now the deal is, you know, what are the rules and what can and can't do and what kind of songs and how long? This is what, quote unquote, a young Father John said to them. We have many young children that come in here, ages 2 to 16. Most of them have been abused, have to be on medication. We watch them continuously because they might hurt themselves or others. His eyes watered up and he went on, we take months and years to help them understand what real love is. They come in here having heard, if you love me, you will do this or that, often sexually perverse things. They've been so tainted and hurt in hearing what love is that they have come to hate love, to deplore what one does to love, to actually come to a point to take their own life because of how that kind of love has hurt them so deeply and even at a very young age. And Jack starts, I sat there with tears running down my face, and he continued, we have to show them, help them see what real love is. It takes a long time, but God is so good, and he helps open those little hearts back up. And when that happens, they come back alive. Jack continues, Finding Church is opening up places that have been wrongly defined in my life as well. Honestly, some of your book is hurting me. Don't take that wrong. It's just that my learning has to be undone in places, and I realize that. Like all things true, Father's revealing just how much I am loved in my mess, and he is encouraging me. Oh, man. I love that. I love that for whatever trappings, Father, the title, yes, it's freaky calling somebody Father, but that's that system. But look at his heart. Look at Father Boyle's heart, who reaches out to gang kids in the inner city of Los Angeles. A book I recommended years ago, Tattoos on the Heart. I hadn't read it. Read it. And realize that the love of God taking root in the human heart is bigger than our systems. It's bigger even for the people who are in them. And when you talk about loving people where they are, sharing your freedom, finding your freedom, not looking at Father John through the grid of even his own system, but as a young man who is stricken for broken lives and catching that heartbeat of love for the broken, that's what I mean by sharing your freedom. Where you can, fine. Don't push your life beyond the freedoms that you have. I think we make that mistake all the time. Let God open the door to you. And so then going back to Michael's email, second question he has, how can I be just friends with people outside the church building when, again, they're so congregation-minded? Simple thing like helping a neighbor move turns into sales pitch for their church, and he goes on and on. And when they don't want to be friends with someone who doesn't go to church, how do you handle that? And I think a lot of people have this issue. particularly when their friendships end. The people that were close to them, now they don't go anymore. I think sometimes they just end because people get awkward. We want them to pursue us. But we don't take the time to pursue them, to go have lunch with them, hey, I've missed you. Could we talk? And if we're going to talk about, you got to get out of that church because I did, my life's never been better until I did, then you can expect those to not go well. But if you can still celebrate the friendship you have, the love that you have, share your journeys together. And if you can't do that with folks that are congregation minded, one of the best things that I have found is I didn't know anybody when I was inside that wasn't congregation minded. So obviously getting out of that was a bit painful. But then when you get out of it, you start meeting lots of people who aren't. There's lots of people. We got a whole room full of strangers here a couple of Saturdays ago, and there was already love and friendship. And if we'd have lived closer together, there'd have been a real danger. Let's do this every week. But you know what? What we can do every week is, who does God want me to be with? Pursue some people. Make some invitations. Open the door. Because that's how this body of Christ connects. The body of Christ is not you sitting at home being the church. The body of Christ is you finding your freedom and freedom to engage others and opening your heart and life so that others come into that and new friendships grow. If all your friendships are congregationally minded people, yeah, Michael, you're going to get pretty worn out. But how I handle it is just, hey, thanks, sorry, it's not connecting, and then find people who do. And what you're going to find is there's lots more people that need to be loved. When we stop looking for me, how do I get loved, and start looking for people to love, you'll not run out of people who want to be loved. And his third question is this: I too experienced what you did when it came to meeting with people. The instant we said, let's do this every week, it lost something. However, what I've also experienced is that I don't seem to have a lot of friends. Now, is that because God isn't bringing people into my life to be in relationship with them? Or is it because I'm an introvert and I need to talk to people more? How do I initiate those relationships? Well, first of all, the first part is people get together just like this Saturday. We say, let's do this every week. The reality is next week it would have been good. Next week it would have been probably gooder because we're getting to know each other. And at some point down there, it's just, oh, crud, it's Thursday night again. Let's go over to Wayne and Sarah's. And now we got to, what are we going to do? And just don't let it go from being a group of friends to a meeting. As often as you get together, celebrate the friendships. If doing this every week is a hassle, stop doing it every week. Do it every couple of weeks. Just live in an open home, live in an open life. If you're an introvert, I don't know what that means, to be honest, Michael. I would want to get to know you more. What does an introvert mean that you don't have friends? There may be connected. If you don't have a desire for friendships, and if it's difficult for you to invite people out to lunch or invite people to watch a football game together or whatever, then yeah, maybe you won't have a lot of that friendship stuff. But I think being more relationally free and not having all the religious baggage to put on people, I think we become more engaging people and friendships grow. And if there's a barrier to that, maybe we explore that a bit more. Fourth question was, how do you handle it when a friend, neighbor, acquaintance asks you, where do you go to church? Again, I found this a common question among Christians. And when people ask me this, the first reaction is fear and worry about how they will react when I tell them I don't go to church. I love the honesty of that. Because when we're asked that, our first thought is, what are they going to think of me? And what are they going to think of me? And are they going to be disapproving? Sends us down such dark space that we don't have any good response. Any response is going to be reactive, or I'm going to go to church. I am the church. And we're going to do things that actually cut off the very people that we may love and care about. And I think just simple, generous honesty works with people. And if you're more concerned about them than you, and again, that's finding your freedom, living in your freedom, sharing your freedom. I think you get to a place. Initially, when you need validation and you feel judged by that, yeah, you're going to say a lot of silly things, or you're just going to clam up and go away, and you're going to look for an answer because you're tired of feeling awkward in the situation. When you find greater freedom, and you're going to care more about them than you, then you're going to find very generous, honest ways to, even if it's just, we really don't go anymore. Really? Why not? No, we're just finding other ways to share this life of Jesus more relationally. Now, some people may want to have that conversation. Others may say, well, do you mean like house church? Well, not exactly like house church, but yeah, we gather with people in our home, or we gather with people in various places, and we share our journey, and then just whatever's honest about that. We share our journey in ways that I missed when I was part of a larger congregation or whatever. When you're being gently honest with people inside your freedom, That's not a scary question at all. That's a great question to explore. Understand why in the initial stages, it's one of the worst things you can possibly be asked. And you'd love to just have a nice little thing to throw back at them, particularly when you know, and you may not always be right, but you know that they're going to judge you. Because if you're not in a pew at Sunday morning or Saturday night at a specific time, you're not part of his church. There's a lot of people that believe that. And you know what? I think their offense or their distancing of you is probably a blessing to you. It may not look like it at the time because you feel rejected, but it's probably a blessing to not hang out with people who can't appreciate your journey, especially in those early stages. It's always helpful to have the kinds of conversations, even if they're online conversation or listen to this podcast or whatever, that kind of says, I'm okay here. I'm okay here. I'm okay here. Letting God take you into that deeper space that sets you at ease in Him will let this journey go easier. And then someone sent this, or actually posted this on the findingchurch.com site. And I know Greg Boyd, I don't know him personally, but I've read some of his stuff. I like a lot of where he comes from. And it just quoted a quote from Greg Boyd, which I'd not heard before. And he said this, "We are either ascribing worth to ourselves at the cost of someone else, or we're ascribing worth to others at the cost of ourselves." I think that's what finding freedom and maybe finding church is all about. We're either ascribing worth to ourselves, we're trying to draw attention and value here at your expense, or I'm ascribing worth to you at the cost of myself. I'm willing to lay down my life. I'm willing to extend my life to find you where you are. I think that's where freedom opens us up into. And hopefully each of us have the freedom to start where we are, to be honest about where, let God draw you and say, man, I would love to be in that questioned environment. Where do you go to church? And be totally free about where I'm at and able to love them in it. Wayne, I'm not there yet. Oh, great. Be honest about that. You and God get to sort that out in days to come. It's a great process. We'd love to just walk away from the old thing and then just feel like, well, the next day I live in this new way of thinking. It's not a new way of thinking. It's a new way of living. It grows out of freedom at a heart level. It's not just changing the concepts and the script up in the mental capacity. It's changing the way I live inside of Him, which frees me to treat you differently. And that's the God journey I hope that we're learning to live on. Because if those of us who are quote-unquote the duns, and yes, I hate that label, but if our doneness contributes to that same sense of superiority and we're right and you're wrong and we're just going to go do whatever we want in God's name, and if it doesn't make us better lovers in the world, it's not going to help bring His church together in the way that Jesus is doing. And you know what? I want to be part of that. I want to be part of His church as it's being built in the earth, and it's being built irrespective of systems. Not just outside, inside too. It's people, not labels. It's individuals finding life, connection, and friendship.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com or add your voice by calling our comment line at 805-539-6980.